Cocoon, offering inpatient and outpatient services to Sullivan County and surrounding communities. Learn more at garnethealth.org.
Welcome to the Local Edition, news and information keeping you connected in the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania. I'm your host, Jason Dole, and we have a special episode tonight all about the New York State budget. If you've listened to the Local Edition any other day this month, there's a very good chance that you've heard about the New York State budget and the political battle in Albany to get it passed. And this process all started with the State of the State address given by Governor Kathy Hochul in January, followed by the release of her proposed budget at the start of February. And since then, we've had regular reports from Karen DeWitt and others documenting the differences between Governor Hochul's administration, the Democrat-led Assembly, and the Democrat-led Senate, all of which have their own budget proposals. And the battle, the struggle, the fight, whatever hyperbole we use to describe it, it's all about working out those differences to create one budget that will pass a vote. This month, we've also heard from Republicans in Albany who are in the minority but still have a voice. And we've aired reports on groups weighing in on the budget, nonprofits, advocacy groups, lobbyists, which all have issues and projects that they want addressed in the budget. For instance, New York's Farm Bureau, which wants the state to double the amount of money allotted to a nationally recognized farm safety program. Child care advocates looking for wage increases for child care workers. State superintendents of schools expressing concern that the state's biggest ever education budget may not be enough in the face of a teacher shortage. And here on the Local Edition, I had an extended conversation with the League of Women Voters, which is spearheading the Let New York Vote Coalition, and their call for more funding for local boards of election, a stronger election infrastructure, and increased voter education and access to the polls. That last item does not appear to have made it into any of the proposals for the budget so far. Of course, it may still be buried deep in an obscure place somewhere in one of them. But how can I even dare to say that much for semi-certain that I don't think it's in the budget? Well, that's thanks to New York Focus, which published a comprehensive side-by-side comparison of all of the proposals, the governors, the assemblies, the senates, broken down by categories like education, housing, and criminal justice, and then listing line items and proposals under each of those categories. The article is called Here's What's at Stake in the 2023 State Budget, Your Guide to the 2023 Budget Fight. It's now up at New York Focus's website, which is nysfocus.com. And it does such a good job of clearly laying out a very complicated thing, three budgets, that we asked New York Focus managing editor Maya Hibbett to join us and give you some insight into this wild budget process. And yes, all of this, everything I've been talking about, everything we're going to talk about tonight, it's all about a budget, which Maya admits is the sort of thing that can make folks' eyes glaze over. But she also points out that under the hood of the numbers and proposals and percentage increases and decreases, there are a lot of issues that voters actually care about. As Maya Hibbett explains, the budget is where money and policy intersect.
In some ways, one of the clearest ways you can see this illustrated is if you look at the graph portion of this guide on our website, because in the graph, some of the line items have just a number. You know, it says musical theater tax credit, $100 million increase across the board. But then others have kind of a phrase or a short sentence to describe what an actual change would be. So if you look at the climate section, there's a lot more stuff that is about actual policy implementation. So it says like gas bans fossil fuels in new construction, bans fossil fuels in new construction with some other stipulations. And none of those things are a specific.
You know, I really noticed the contrast between some of these items in the looking at the health section, which is one section where what the Senate and Assembly are proposing tend to be at least 50% more than what the governor is proposing. Not on every item. For example, mental health, all three entities are proposing a $1 billion increase for mental health. Okay, they agree there. But on something like cost of living raise for care workers, governor says, okay, $160 million. Senate and Assembly are saying $487 million, which is more than twice the essential plan numbers. They're even bigger. The governor's proposing $420 million. Senate and Assembly are proposing $1.7 billion. So that's those are some big differences to bridge.
Yeah, they really are. I think one more that I would add where I think perhaps they have the most dramatic split. Although this is back to policy rather than spending, is on this Medicaid expansion change for undocumented New Yorkers. So last year, Hochul said, okay, I'm going to seek out some federal money to make undocumented immigrants in New York eligible for Medicaid. That's going to go into effect sometime in 2023. Basically, she hasn't figured it out yet. She hasn't sought the money from the federal government. And so this year, her policy proposal was, let's push that an additional year. Let's figure out the Medicaid for undocumented people 1 year from now. And neither House included that measure in their budgets. And what that means on a policy level is a little bit funky, because it's not to say that they necessarily are rejecting her plan outright, but they're certainly not presenting it as one of their kind of planks of their priorities.
There could be another column here in some sense, though it would be much more vague, because there is another party, you know, beyond. There's the governor, there's the Senate, there's Assembly. But what I've really noticed this month of March is that there's all these groups, these non-governmental groups or nonprofits or advocacy groups or lobbying groups, people that have interests, people that have policies that they want to see in place. And this is when they're making some noise, because this is their chance to have their issue taken care of, is via the budget process.
Yeah, exactly. This is really kind of the hot time for any, as you said, lobbyists, advocacy groups, anyone who wants to have some influence in Albany, who wants to kind of shape what the coming year is going to look like. This is really the moment, because most of the policy for the whole year will be decided in this budget process.
As we look at the different proposals for the budget from the governor, from the Senate, from the Assembly, there are some issues that people have heard a lot about that are playing out in this budget. The fight over the policy is also a fight now in the budget. And one of those is bail reform, still going on. And so where are we at with the bail reform arguments on both sides? And then where's the budget at with this?
Yeah, so Hochul's bail reform proposals are, even to call them the bill reform proposals is a bit of a misnomer, because I think, you know, a lot of listeners probably know there was this bail reform law in 2019 that caused kind of a huge firestorm, right? That it removed cash bail in most cases. And it said, you know, if you get arrested, you don't necessarily have to pay to get it back out of jail, because this is really criminalizes people who are in poverty. And Hochul's proposal wouldn't just roll that back. It actually goes a little bit further. So even before the 2019 bail reform, New York required that judges who were setting bail could only consider the likelihood that a person returns to court or doesn't return to court. And for bail-eligible cases, the proposal that Hochul put forth would actually strip those considerations from the law. So it would free up judges' discretion to consider more factors when they're setting bail. Now, some people think this is a good thing. Some people think this is a bad thing, because when you think about the purpose of bail, really, like fundamentally, I think people mostly do tie it to that question of, is this person going to come back to court or not? Now, this doesn't apply for the most violent of felonies. You know, if a person is like truly an active threat to the public, then there's a different calculus that goes on there. And just, I guess, on Wednesday, the 22nd, Hochul had a press conference where she acknowledged some of the critiques of her bail proposals and really doubled down on them. You know, she said she doesn't want to remove this change from her proposal, and that she's pretty committed to fighting this until the end. Neither the Senate nor the Assembly adopted this policy in their version of the budget. It's a little unclear what they will let through, because, as I said before, just because they didn't include it in their proposal, it doesn't mean that they're going to reject it whole cloth. It just means that they didn't put it forth as a priority that they're trying to establish now.
What do you think the governor is trying to do here? Is it purely optical political position? Is there something that she feels needs to actually be done here? What, if you can have any insight into this, what do you think she's up to?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, it is really tough, right? It's hard to know, I think, at any moment what the governor is thinking or why these proposals are unfolding. I do think that if we've seen anything from her challenge in the fall with from Lee Zeldin and the kind of coverage she's gotten, especially from right-wing media like Fox News, the New York Post, et cetera, there's a lot of fear-mongering around bail reform, right? And so my impression is that Hochul and a lot of Democratic leaders like her sort of struggle with how to handle those kinds of attacks and whether or not to respond to them, whether or not to kind of bend to the criticism. Because although she has this Democratic legislature in both chambers who are not necessarily going to have the same kind of fear-mongering critiques that are coming at her from the right, that does exist in the broader political ecosystem. And it would be silly to say that there are no New York voters who think this way or feel this way. And so I do think there is a political dimension to it where she is interested in appearing tough on crime, as a lot of Democrats currently do. I mean, she and Mayor Eric Adams in New York City are very aligned rhetorically in this way, I think. There's also a lot of political pressure from police and corrections officers unions. Those are a fairly powerful kind of non-legislative entity who do, you know, they don't make the laws, but they certainly have a lot of political power and a lot of political weight. The idea of pleasing or upsetting a law enforcement union is very important, I think, to a lot of elected officials, especially at the state level.
Another issue that gets a lot of political spin on it, and you see headlines like, essentially, they're coming to take your stoves away. And I see actual information related to that in this budget that kind of tells like a clear picture of what this conversation is about. There's two items in the climate and environment section. One is a gas ban in new buildings, and the other one's a gas phase out in existing buildings. That gas ban in new buildings means no fossil fuel connections in new constructions by 2026 for small residential buildings and by 2029 for all other buildings. A gas phase out in existing buildings. And this is the governor's proposal, by the way, is what I'm reading from here. And this would be banning the replacement of fossil fuel for small residential buildings by 2035 for all other buildings. And then specifically says does not affect gas stoves in the governor's portion. So that's what the governor's proposing. I've heard that the governor's coming to take people's gas stoves away. So what does the actual budget suggestions from all parties here say to you about this issue?
Yeah, I mean, as you said, there's no proposal to come take your gas stove away. That's not real. I think this actually somewhat similar to the bail debate. This is another instance where I think a kind of national firestorm of coverage has sort of descended on New York State and affected how Hochul's proposals are being presented in this case. So, you know, there was all of this kind of furor over the idea that Biden was going to ban gas stoves, and which he's not either. This has been in the works for a while. So the state has been building this kind of climate plan. They passed this very, very ambitious climate law that said New York is going to cap emissions at all of these different points from all of these different sources. And they've been working for over 3 years now to figure out how exactly to implement it. And this buildings question is one of the biggest prongs, because buildings are a huge source of emissions. You know, I think people sometimes forget about them because they don't see them the way you see a traffic jam where there's the smog coming out of all of the cars. But the buildings really do let off a lot of fossil fuel emissions. So Hochul was mostly just following the guidelines of this state climate plan that has a council where they've been kind of laying out these very precise, meticulous, specific regulations for what this should look like. And so that's where this plan to replace boilers and furnaces eventually and to stop constructing all electric to start constructing all electric buildings in the future is coming from.
These are, again, as you said, like laws that were already passed. New York State legislatively already put itself on the path to hit a number of markers in its climate plan. Well, then the question becomes, how do we hit those? And the budget proposals is one of the ways to say, well, here are where those benchmarks are. Here's what's going to be funded. Here's what's not going to be funded. And it's kind of like, I think we're going to be seeing more and more of these flare-ups in terms of these becoming hot-button issues, because at the end of the day, if you're going to fight climate change, you have to change something, and there's people that don't want some things changed.
Right, right, exactly. And I guess this is probably a good point to outline the difference between the governor's proposal and the legislature's proposal. So basically, for new buildings, you know, the proposal to say when we make a new building in the future, we're not going to put in a fossil fuel hookup. The Senate and the Assembly mostly signed on to that. They had some little tiny tweaks to how they want to see it implemented, but for the most part, they were on board with that proposal. And so that looks like it's probably going to go through. But the proposal for existing buildings did not appear in the legislature's counter proposal. And I'm not sure exactly why, but it's probably likely that's because of this kind of fury that we were seeing about the fear over people losing their gas stoves, and also the notion that there's a lot of concern about just the concept of change and the idea that, like, okay, if there's a power outage in a snowstorm and it's cold, are you going to be able to rely on electric heat? I think that is a real question. And I do think that there are increasing solutions to make those heating systems more reliable, but I think this is where you see the legislature thinking about those constituents' fears very actively in their proposal.
You know, I think we'll take a quick break, and then when we come back, because we're doing the full show of this conversation, we'll talk more about some of the policy debates that are playing out in this budget and what you're seeing there.
Okay, sounds good.
We're talking with Maya Hibbett, managing editor of New York State Focus, and we'll be back right after this break.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of 2 Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
Opioid use disorder is a chronic disease that affects many residents in Sullivan County. Like other chronic diseases, it can be managed with medications like buprenorphine and methadone. This is the most effective way to save lives, manage withdrawal symptoms, and reduce the risk of relapse, overdose, and death. Learn more about medications for opioid use disorder at healtogetherny.org/Sullivan. That's healtogetherny.org/Sullivan. Paid for by the NIH Heal Initiative, New York Research Site.
Welcome back to The Local Edition. I'm your host, Jason Dole, and I'm talking with Maya Hibbett, managing editor of New York State Focus, about the New York State budget. Her breakdown of the 3 budget proposals from the governor, the assembly, and the state senate, they're all at newyorkstatefocus.com. We left off in the first half talking about hot-button budget issues that include bail reform, and restrictions on fossil fuels in New York buildings. So those are a couple of the admittedly more juicy political issues at work in the budget. But because you spent so much time looking at this, I'm wondering what are some of the other policy implications or agreements or disagreements between the governor and the legislature that strike you as particularly interesting in this budget process?
So, I mean, one that I think this is an agreement. This is not a disagreement. But that I think is really stark and interesting, and is in line with a lot of our coverage that we've done at New York Focus, is this subsidy for the horse racing industry for Belmont Park. Governor Hochul proposed this loan for $455 million, so it's almost half a billion, to go to the horse racing industry in New York, which by, I think, most traditional economic accounting measures, you could say, is largely failing. People don't go see horse racing the way they used to, and it's very unclear that the crowds will ever return. I think it's just kind of declined in popularity. But it's regarded throughout New York, especially throughout the government, as this very iconic New York thing. And so New York is already subsidizing horse racing. The state is already lending all of this money and giving a lot of tax breaks to support the racetracks. But Belmont Park on Long Island is a fairly old facility that needs a lot of upkeep, and they want to basically redo it. And so the governor is proposing this almost $500 million loan to the horse racing industry, which, for a point of comparison, is about a third of what she proposed for more MTA funding. And, like, of course, the MTA is being offered more funding, but if you just think of how severe transit needs are in,
and
in
how
some
many
cases.
How many people rely on transit versus attend horse races?
Exactly. So the New York City subway alone has a ridership of about 2.5 million daily, and that, or it did in 2021. And that's only one piece of the MTA. So anyway, she proposed this, and there was a lot of, including from us, there was a decent amount of media coverage and criticism. There's criticism within the legislature, both in the Senate and the Assembly. So we sort of wondered what was going to happen when the One House came out, if these forces within the Senate and the Assembly would have a counterproposal not to give them this loan, or at least give them a little bit less, because remember, as I said, the industry is subsidized by New York State already. So whatever revenue it generates, which is what it will use to pay the loan back, is going to come partially from New York State. And so it's just not that fiscally advisable, I think, according to a lot of economists, like sports economists that we talk to. But both the Senate and the Assembly put the loan in their proposals as well. And so it looks like that's definitely going to go through. And it seems like the sort of situation, the horse racing industry has extremely powerful lobbyists. They're pretty entrenched, is what I'm saying. And so I think it was sort of one of those situations where the government spending and the kind of like obstinance that you see becomes very stark. And that I thought was an illustrative kind of moment.
You know, we're talking about the Assembly, we're talking about the Senate, and one of the quirks of New York politics is these bodies are overwhelmingly Democratic Party. You know, the Democrats are in charge of both of these. So where does, in this budget process, do you see any place where Republicans are having some input or having some say, or are aligned with their colleagues? I know there's not a party breakdown in these, One House proposals, but do you see any subjects or funding items where you actually see, Republicans have a presence?
Yeah. I mean, I think, as we were talking about before with the bail proposal and some of the other criminal justice proposals, I do think, although these are Democratic proposals that this Democrat-dominated legislature has to sign on to whatever they do, I do think you see a fair amount of Republican influence in that area, as well with the issue of taxes generally, I think is an area where you often see kind of Republican influence. So there's this fight where Hochul pledged that she would not raise income taxes at all. But both houses of the legislature proposed this 0.5% tax increase on the wealthiest New Yorkers. Just to give you an idea, people who make over $5 million a year would see their taxes rise to 10.8%. And people who are making over $25 million a year would see their taxes rise to 11.4%. And again, that's only a 0.5% increase from what it was before. And these proposals would raise about $700 million a year in state funding. And one thing to keep in mind is that while those are the Senate and the Assembly's proposals, Hochul's proposal is no income tax increase at all. And I do wonder, who's pushing her to oppose that? And who's saying you can't raise taxes on the wealthiest people? And I wonder who will win. And of course, I think a lot of the Republicans in the legislature and the Senate who are there and do have some influence will probably be fighting these tax increases, and they might have a little bit of success. Now, on the corporate tax increase, Hochul and the legislature are more aligned. So they both proposed extending this corporate tax hike for 3 years. So in 2021, the state raised top corporate tax rates. They went from 6.5 to 7.25%. And that was a 3-year temporary proposal that is expiring in 2024. All three have agreed, let's extend this 3 more years. But there is a more progressive contingent that says, let's just make this permanent. We should just raise the corporate tax rate. Why are we kind of kicking the can down the road and doing these 3-year extensions? And of course, if something changes, because politics are weird, things change, and we get more Republican control in the future, it would be very easy to let that just lapse. You wouldn't even have to repeal a law. And so I think that's another instance where you see some sort of more conservative pull, even if the decision being made is a Democratic policy.
Right. So as we said earlier, the deadline for New York State budget is April 1st. Everyone expects it to go past this deadline, perhaps not as far past the deadline as it used to years and years and years ago, for people of a certain age might remember. but I mean, whether it's the first week of April or later, whenever these fights get fully reconciled, then there's a budget. After the budget passes, is there a moment, whether it's the legislators themselves communicating their constituents or us in the media, is there a point where we say, okay, here's how the fight's resolved. This is what's actually here. This is what's not there.
For us, there will be. I think we'll probably do another, I'm not sure if it'll have the exact same structure, but another sort of roundup to say, like, here's where we actually landed. Here's what the budget actually decided, because I do think that is a very important thing to consider. I do think, although most of the policy decisions, as we were saying, will be made in this budget, it's not the end of the legislative session, so it won't mean that nothing else can get done for fiscal year 2024. But it is where most of the work is coming. So yeah, I mean, I think We will do some coverage of what is actually found in the budget, and you can read that at New York Focus, which is nysfocus.com. And I think, yeah, there'll be some media coverage.
Right. Well, you'll do some. We'll do some. And then maybe we'll get you back to do this together again, because this is a great in-depth look at this battle that's brewing in Albany as they try to get the budget passed. I want to thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us.
Of course, yeah. Thanks so much for having me.
We've been talking to Maya Hibbett, managing editor of New York State Focus, about the New York State budget. Our conversation was originally much longer, too long for this one program. You can hear the full conversation at our website, wjffradio.org. New York Focus has an article called Here's What's at Stake in the 2023 State Budget, Your Guide to the 2023 Budget Fight. And it's up now at New York Focus's website, nysfocus.com. We will continue to cover the state budgeting process up to and beyond the budget's due date, which again is Saturday. No fooling. So stay listening to Radio Catskill and be here tomorrow night when we'll do it all over again on the local edition. I've been your host, Jason Dole. Thank you so much for listening. Mr. Kusar Grace is coming up next with the Music Emporium. This is Radio Catskill. Listen local.
I'm Cassie of Rare Pair Radio. It's a weekly showcase of primarily female artists, but also a wide range of avant-garde musicians, the fruit of post-punk, experimental, and fringe music.
Your eyes are set on stars. I love to see you shine, because you really blow my mind.
Rare Pair Radio, Friday at 8 p.m.
WJFF Jeffersonville? W233AH Monticello. You're listening to Radio Catskill, public radio for the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania.